Okay, thank you very much, Dave. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Hugh and I'm alcoholic. And great to see Big Turno here, see? And it's good to be here. I'm very grateful, recovered alcoholic. You know, I'm so happy to be sober. It's a great, great gift, you know, and it means an awful lot to me, like, you know. And these days, like, it's the simple things that matter most, you know. I'm getting up out of bed in the morning, have a nice, clean bed, you know, dry. And I'm not frightened of anything. Do you know what I mean? I'm not frightened. I don't care about anything. I just get up and I get into the kitchen and make myself a nice big cup of coffee, strong as hell. And then I sit down, drink that, and plan out what I'm going to do. Have a shower and a shave. All these things I couldn't do. Do you know what I mean? I can face a breakfast. I can do all these things. And it's wonderful. It's really, really wonderful. Then I can go out. I can go shopping. I can cross roads. I can use the underground, I can use buses, I can use trains, you know what I mean? I can do anything I like, I can cross bridges. All them things I couldn't do because my nerves were shattered completely, you know, when I stopped drinking. And it's been a hell of a journey. It's great today, you know, it's the simple things like this that matter so much, you know, the freedom, the absolute freedom I have, you know. I don't drive, you know. I wasn't very successful at that either, like, so... I get around and I love having the independence of getting around like that. So I'm lucky enough to have a freedom pass now, so I get around free on all the transport. I take it back a little bit first. I was born in Dublin, and But anyway, four kids were born Drumcondra. I lost it, sorry about that. We were born Drumcondra. Four of us were born in a one-bedroom flat. My mother had the four of us there because she had to have four children to get a council house, a corporation house, as it's called over there. And so she had to knock out four as quickly as possible to get a house. We were all born in this one-bedroom flat that they were renting. And then... We moved from there, and both my parents were alcoholic, you know, and they're very heavy drinkers and very violent people, like, and a lot of the violence was during the week. And on the weekend, like, they used to be much better, like, when they had their takeaways from the pub and that, and it's be all in great form, and there'd be plenty of kissing and hugging and all of us kids. We used to get up to recite poems or sing songs for them out of bed. Used to bring a load of people back from the pub, you know. And I used to always admire the way drink worked for them, you know. And I always just wanted to be like watching men in pubs and things like that, you know, a man standing there with a pint in one hand and a cigarette in the other. And I really, really wanted to be like that myself, you know. It was the only ambition they really seemed to have, you know, in them days, because I seen how happy people were with drink taken, you know. And then, of course, we started in our early teens, we started drinking ourselves, me and the mates and things. We used to rob scrap mostly to get money. We used to break into derelict houses, do you know what I mean, factories and stuff like that, and rob all the copper and brass, aluminium, and lead, and then sell it to the scrapyard and get a few bob. Then we buy some cider and a bottle of VP usually. And we used to mix them together, you know. Then we'd bait the shite out of each other, or we'd be laughing and crying, you know what I mean? We wouldn't know where we were going. But it was something else, but there was a hit there. There was something in it, you know what I mean? And something I always looked forward to doing. And then to get away from home, I was 17, like a 4 months, I was 17 and 4 months. It was August in 1969. I couldn't wait till I was 18. There was another 8 months to go before I could actually leave home. And I couldn't hang on for another 8 months because it was either the father was going to kill me or I was going to kill him. I think he was the one that was going to come out on top. So I joined the Irish Army, basically to get away from home. You know, there wasn't any real heroics involved there at all. And the drinking took off when I was in there. I was already a reasonably decent drink, well, decent, I could hold a few, you know. And as it was amongst a lot of recruits from all over Ireland, most of them couldn't really drink at all. I felt superior in that sense that I could drink more than the rest of them. But I got into an awful lot of fights there as well, and things went, you know, pretty bad a lot of the time. And I ended up getting into a fight when I was up in Dundalk. And I came out of the fight second, and I got taken to Louth County Hospital for the usual stitches and stuff. And from there, I was transferred to Dublin, to the Army Hospital, St. Brickens there, off the quays. And classed as an alcoholic, I was made to go to an AA meeting. And they took me in a Land Rover to St. Patrick's Hospital in Dublin. It used to be there beside Stevenson's. It's still there now, the hospital. And I went in the meeting because they were watching me from the Land Rover. So I went in, and there was no women there at all. There was a bunch of old men sitting around. But to me, they were old, because I was only 19, and they all looked ancient, you know, and they're sitting around there smoking and moaning at them. I thought, what in the name of Jesus am I doing here, you know? But anyway, as soon as the Land Rover was gone, I walked out, you know, and went for a few pints. And that was basically like the army were glad to see the back of me. Like, I was in and out of trouble. I was locked up a lot of times when I was in there. I was always getting into fights and things and that, you know. But, I got out of it and I came straight over to London in 72. And the intention was to stay here for about 6 months or a year and move on to America or Australia, you know. I'm still here. I'll be 49 years here in July. But I love London, you know. I do love it, you know. Ireland is my nation, and a Dublin man, I'll always be a Dublin man, but this is my home, you know what I mean? I've settled here, and I'm happy here, very, very happy here. I've been through quite a lot, like ups and downs, you know. But the drinking took off, like, big time then over here. I got into the pub trade, you know, and I was gargling all the time. Any chance I got, you know, I mean, I was drinking, and I was working between buildings and factories, offices and pubs. I got into the pub trade. Went from barman to head barman. Then I done the training with a couple of different breweries and got my own pubs. And I lost them as a result of the drinking. Do you know what I mean? I hit a customer one day accidentally, and that lost me the pub. Like, you know, the thing was, he was a half pint drinker. Him and his mate, they were a half pint drinker. I hated half pint drinkers, you know. And the two of them were sitting there in the pub, and they used to come in every day, 2:30, and they'd order 2 halves of bitter. And then they'd make that last them right up till 3 o'clock, and then call the other half. And they'd be the last ones out of the pub, you know. I couldn't stand the sight of them. I like people to be proper drinkers. And one day there, I was drinking with the Johnny Walker rep, and I was drinking a lot of whiskey. And I was well cut by the time they came in. And for a crack, there was a New York police baton behind the bar on the wall, an ornament. And I took it down, and I pushed the hand of the clock up just past 3 o'clock so they couldn't get a second drink, you know. And they had a go at the barmaid, and then I told them. And then what I did is I lashed the police baton down. I wanted to hit the counter between the two of them and give them a fright. I hit a man on the head. That's how drunk I was, you know. And then to cover myself, I would call the police. Because the whole pub started, I don't know how that happened, but the whole pub started fighting. So I called the police, like, to cover my own back. And when the police came, like, most of them were gone. And the only one they arrested was me, you know. So that cost me the pub, you know. Another one it cost because I kept disappearing all the time. Do you know what I mean? It caused a fire in another place up in Golders Green. It was all the time I was drinking. I was getting into an awful lot of fights, you know what I mean? And getting arrested an awful lot of the time. And most of the arrests at the start were all grand, you know what I mean? Just drunken, disorderly, nuisance, you know, urinating in the public place. All the silly little ones, you know. But then start getting soft mattresses, you know what I mean? Start getting... into trouble, like for hitting out at the cops and things, and being done for assault and stuff like that, and then start getting time, you know, and like getting a few months here and a few months there. And then in the end, like, I've done about 3 years in prison, you know, on and off over the years. And then, like, I was married. I ruined that, like, the first, I've been married four times. I ruined the first one, though, to, through the drinking. And I was in and out of the mental hospitals, you know, and tried to get help. But every time I come out again, I drank, you know. The last time I was in there, I was in the lockup ward. I was so far gone. I was in there for 5 months, you know. And the week I was getting out, one of the nurses put a note on my bed. AA will be here tonight at 8 o'clock in DOT room, occupational therapy room. Make sure you go over. And I thought, oh, and I thought they were coming down to see me. So I thought, well, all right, the least I can do is go and have a chat with them. So I went over to this meeting and met loads of lovely people. You know what I mean? They're all very nice and friendly to me. And I remember thinking to myself, yeah, if the drinking ever gets too bad, I definitely go to AA. And this is me in the fucking madhouse for 5 months. Do you know what I mean? And wanting to stay there, not wanting to go home. I was a married man with two kids. And I wanted to stay in the madhouse because I felt safer. Because I knew when I got out, I'd drink. And that's exactly what did happen. It was the usual old story. Like, I got out and I went over to for the game of pool that night. There was a pool match on. And I went over for it. And I didn't fully intend to drink some soft drink, a Coca-Cola or something like that. And when I got, like, more or less there, I thought, well, if I have 4 pints of Black Label, I mean, it's hardly even alcohol, you know, it's only shite. I wouldn't think that would do me any harm. And then when I was waiting to get served, I thought, well, you might as well have 4 pints of Holstein, because it's only 2 pence more. And at least if you have 4 pints of that, you won't want any more after that. And by the end of the night, I was steaming, you know, and I was full of whiskey and everything else. And I was arguing, and the governor put me out, and him and his barman put me out. But I went home into bed with the wife and wet the bed, you know. And that was it for her. Like, she thought, Jesus, Mary and Jose and Joseph, I have to be visiting and taking the kids up to see him all the time in a nut house for 5 months. He's only a few hours out of it, and here he is pissed again, and the bed is wet, you know. And so she was gone. And when she was gone, I stopped. I stopped the drinking after a while to try and get her back. That was the only reason. And I didn't want to go into the madhouse again. And so I decided I'd do it at home on my own. And it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. Do you know what I mean? I went down from 14 stone down to 9 stone. I hadn't got the ability to leave the house to get stuff. You know, I used to... The only times I did risk it, like a couple of mornings, because there was an Indian shop across the main road, and they'd be open at 6 o'clock. And the only reason I knew that, because I used to get beer there one time. So I used to go across there, like, occasionally, just to get milk and stuff like that. But I wasn't getting any solace down me or anything like that. I was in a terrible, terrible way, you know. I was frightened to death, you know. And any move, even the curtain blowing, you know, I jumped, you know what I mean? I think there was people there, and I could hear the kids. Like, she was gone with the kids. I could hear the kids upstairs, you know. I'd be going up looking in the wardrobes and under the bed and all that. And if I put the radio or the music or the telly on, I could hear them. I could hear the kids in the background. So I couldn't put them on. I could also hear other voices coming out of it as well. I was very, very confused, you know. I was in a very, very, very bad way, you know. Eventually, anyway, I got the courage to get up and get out and go to a meeting. And the one that I was at in the Springfield, I went back to that again. And I went in and I explained to a couple of blokes that were there, because I got there right early. And they understood. Do you know what I mean? That's amazing. They understood everything I told them. And they were nodding and agreeing with me and all the rest. And they more or less took me under their wing and helped me out, you know. One of them was Mick Devine. He was a great, great man. And I got well, physically, I got well quick. Do you know what I mean? I don't know mentally. I'm still up for grabs today. But I did really, like, sort of pick up well, you know, and everything sort of seemed an awful lot better. I got involved in a lot of service and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? And I had no belief when I went in, and I was trying to fake it to make it, like with Mick Devine. He used to take me out to his, he had a caravan out in the park somewhere, and he used to take me out there and make me a bit of grub and all that. And then he'd want me to say a prayer with him on my knees. I used to join Imran all right, because he was such a lovely man. Do you know what I mean? And, but I didn't, I couldn't get my head around that believing business, you know? And anyway, I got very well. I built up a great relationship with my ex-wife. I'm still friends today, thankfully, you know, and the two kids, and we went on a lot of holidays, you know. I took them all around Ireland, and I took them to France, and Turkey and America. I took them to Disney World for a couple of weeks. All great stuff, do you know what I mean? And that was all true, not drinking, do you know what I mean? I was able to do these things and get myself sorted out. And it went wonderfully well for 13 years I was around. And then I got into a relationship with another woman, and I was obsessed with her, you know, and she was completely off the head, but I didn't even look into that side of it, you know what I mean? And she was as mad as myself, like, and the relationship, that's the way the relationship went. And I cut down, you know, I'd go to the odd meeting here and there, and then I wasn't going at all. Excuse me. I didn't think, you know, I thought I'd get back, you know, something. But anyway, that relationship ended after, I think, about 8 or 9 months. And I didn't go back then, you know. And then a friend of mine, Swansea bloke, he was in a very, he split with his wife. He'd been married for over 20 years. And he was splitting with his wife. And I bumped into him in the street. And he was suicidal, you know. I said, I can't go on, you know. And I said to him, look, come and stay with me for a while. I'll help you out, you know. Now, I didn't realise how vulnerable I was myself, and what I had to offer was very little, really, you know. But I had him in the house there, and I was feeding him, and people pleasing, really. I was going everywhere he wanted to go. And that was a pub every night, you know. And we're in the West End one night anyway, and I was sitting there. And we'd been in there, Jesus, the best part of 2 hours. And he'd only the head gone off the pint. Do you know what I mean? And his own head bent forward, like. And I was cracking jokes and trying this. And, jeez, I wanted to kill him, you know. But then these two women came in and sat facing us. Good-looking women, lovely-looking. And they were laughing and joking and everything else, do you know. And I just looked at him, I looked at them, and then I walked up and got myself a large whiskey. I hadn't had a drink for 13 years and 2 months. I didn't realise how vulnerable I was myself. I really didn't. And it didn't, there was no thought process. Do you know what I mean? I just went and done it, you know? And it was my own fault. I don't like look for any excuses or something like that, like why this happened or why. I did know better, you know? But anyway, that was me back on it then. And it took me 3 years on and off before I actually fully came back. And it was very, very hard to do that. It wasn't like the previous time. I didn't drink the same way, or I didn't get any trouble around like that. Most of the drinking was done at home. And I'd be on it like for about a week. Then I'd be off it for a few months, you know, but I couldn't get myself to AA. And then next minute, I'd find myself just sitting on the bar stool again. Do you know what I mean? And I'd always say the same thing to myself. I hope it's not as bad as it was the last time. You know, that's the truth, you know. And of course it was bad, you know, it was terrible. Anyway, in the end, I couldn't get it down me. I couldn't get the drink to stay down. It wouldn't go past my chest, you know what I mean? It was just stuck in my neck or something. I don't know what was happening, but it wouldn't go down properly. It took ages to get drink down me. I was neither drunk nor sober, do you know what I mean? I didn't know where I was. And I was quite suicidal myself then. I didn't know where to go from here. And of course, I knew deep down inside myself, if I could get back to AA, I'd have a chance, you know. And I finally got up the courage to go to a meeting. And I went to this meeting over in Fulham. I got there early, you know, I didn't want to go in with a room full of people. But I couldn't go in. I kept walking around the block, you know, I couldn't go in the house. And I thought, well, they say to me, well, if anybody has a go at me, you know. Then I made a decision. I thought, right, I'll walk into the meeting. If anybody says anything to me, I'll just fucking knock them out, knock them down, batter them, and walk out. Now, of course, that was never going to happen. Do you know what I mean? It was all in my head. And I walked in there, everybody made me really, really welcome and looked after me very, very well, you know. And there was a bloke, a tube driver, Jim, his name is. He was really, really kind, you know what I mean? He said, yeah, all right, good money, and I did all this, looking at me, his arm around me, dropped me home in his car and all the rest. And then I started again, I started going. And I hated the meetings when I started going again. I hated everybody in them. I used to be sitting there and looking at people. I'd see somebody, say Dave there was going to go up and do the chair. I think, oh, Jesus, this is going to be boring. And yet I'd never seen before in my life, you know? That sort of attitude, you know, and I had this terrible hatred for people. I don't know why or where it's coming from. And anyway, a little bit along the line, tube driver Jim turned around, he says to me one day, Jesus, you've got a lot of colour in your face now. You said you're starting to put the old weight back on. You're looking an awful lot better, you know? And that was, it never dawned on me that I was getting well, do you know what I mean? But that also gave me an awful lot of hope, you know? And since then, I've been going on a regular basis, and I have done very, very well out of it, do you know what I mean? I'm coming up 22 years back. And it's wonderful, do you know what I mean? It's really wonderful. And I just, look, no two of us are the same, do you know what I mean? I just put all that behind me, you know? It's what happened to me. It doesn't have to happen to you. There's no two of us. We're all different people, do you know what I mean? And another thing is, if you're not drinking, you're sober. You know, I've absolutely no time for anybody turning around saying, this dry drunk. There's no such thing as a dry drunk. You're either drunk or you're sober. You know what I mean? If you haven't had a drink today, you're sober. End of story. There's no ifs or buts about that. And nobody has any right to decide what level of sobriety you're at. Do you know what I mean? There's people that these people kill people by talking like that. You know? What about if somebody has a learning difficulty or special needs or something like that? They're going to be still making mistakes 15 years off the drink. They're still saying things that are, you know, a little bit peculiar sense, I suppose. They're not dry drunks. They're sober people. Everybody that's not drinking is sober. How well any of us is another, a totally different matter. Do you know what I mean? But nobody has a right to judge anybody else in AA. Mick Devan used to say to me, he said, there's nobody in that room better than you, and there's nobody in that room worse than you. He said, we're all AA. He said, it doesn't matter about anything else when you're in that room. He said, we're all trying to stay off the drink one day at a time. And that's all that matters, you know. And he was right, you know, of course he was right, you know. And that's the way it is. And it's great today. It really honestly is. I love it, you know. AA has been very good to me. You know, it is me. The meetings are my higher power, me are a power greater than myself. You know what I mean? These people that have got me this far, you know. And it's great. And I hope anybody that's new around, just keep getting to the meetings. Just keep going to your meetings. Get yourself through the day. Get your head on the pillow without picking up that fourth drink. You'll be all right. You know what I mean? You only have to stay off for today. And if you wake up tomorrow, then you can deal with tomorrow. But don't deal with tomorrow today. You know? So thank you very much for listening to me. I hope that was all right.